like Jesus, someone who guides you, and someone who tells you what to do? What is a leader? Just, what's your own answer? You don't need to shout it out, but what is a leader? If you're new to Shofar, then it's one of the things that we do. We develop leaders. And you might be sitting here thinking, well, I'm not in Shofar. Or you might think, I am in Shofar, but I'm not a leader, so carry on, but I'm not going to listen too closely. I'm going to think about the cycle race later or whatever it might be. Listen closely, because if you're in Shofar, you're a leader. Now, you might not have a position of leadership now. You might not have a title of leadership right now. But you will be developed into a leader if you're in Shofar for any length of time. These are our values: passion for Jesus, people to serve, power of belief, and purpose to pursue. If you want to remember those, I always use the five vowels of the English alphabet, but taking out the middle one. So A, E, leaving out I, O, and U. A for passion, which is for Jesus. E for people, which is those whom we serve. We leave out I because there's no place for individualism in church. And then O for power. There is power in what we believe. There's power when we sing, when we praise and worship. There's power when we declare scripture over ourselves and over others, over our city. There's power in what we believe. And we have a purpose to pursue. So these values are what we cannot compromise as we serve our vision. And our vision is to reach nations and generations through three means: disciple making, leadership development, and church planting. Our vision is to reach nations and generations through disciple making, leadership development, and church planting. And we focus, perhaps at different times of the year, on different ones. But for this month, we're going to have a focus on leadership. Carlos, Moses, and Fred May are going to come, and they're going to speak on the ministry conference weekend about leadership, about the leader's view. And we'll just kind of prepare ourselves for that. All I'm going to do really is introduce. There's lots that could be said about leadership, but we're going to look at one chapter, and I mentioned the chapter earlier. It's 1 Corinthians chapter 3. I'm just going to have a brief look at Paul's model of leadership. So if you have a Bible, then please scroll or turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. And while I get myself some water, if you do have a Bible in English, then I need a volunteer to read 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Are you volunteering? Oh, give me the water, thank you. Do you want to read 1 Corinthians 3 as well?
Brothers, I could not address you as spiritual, but as worldly, mere infants in Christ. I gave you milk, not solid food, for you were not yet ready for it. Indeed, you are still not ready. You are still worldly. For since there is jealousy and quarreling among you, are you not worldly? Are you not acting like mere men? For when one says, I will follow Paul, and another, I will follow Apollos, are you not mere men? What, after all, is Apollos, and what is Paul? Only servants, through whom you came to believe, as the Lord has assigned you each his task. I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God made it grow. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. The man who plants and the man who waters have one purpose, and each will be rewarded according to their own labor. For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field, God's building. By the grace God has given me, I laid a foundation as an expert builder, and someone else is building on it. But each one should be careful how he builds. No one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. If any man builds on this foundation using gold, silver, costly stones, wool, hay, or straw, his work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light. It will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test the quality of each man's work. If what he has built survives, he will receive his reward. If it's burnt up, he will suffer loss. He himself will be saved, but only as one escaping through the flames. Don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple, and that God's Spirit lives in you? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy him. For God's temple is sacred, and you are that temple. Do not deceive yourselves. If any one of you thinks he is wise by the standards of this age, he should become a fool so that he may become wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness in God's sight. And it is written, he catches the wise in their craftiness. And again, the Lord knows that the thoughts of the wise are futile. So then, no more boasting about men. All things are yours, whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas or the world or life or death, or the present or the future, all are yours, and you are of Christ, and Christ is of God. Amen.
Amen. Can I have another? Not another chapter. But do read 1 Corinthians chapter 8, because if we had time... Sorry, 1 Corinthians chapter 4. If we had time, then it follows on from 1 Corinthians 3. Thank you. When I was just with the children, we went after last Sunday's service to the Isle of Wight, and a small island off the south coast of England. And we were on the beach as soon as we got there, and somebody had... A brief conversation with somebody who I think was living not too far away from where we were staying, and he asked me a question that I've never been asked by somebody in Tooting. Do you have any boats? Nobody in Tooting has ever asked me, do you have any boats? Because we don't have the sea, there's a River Wandle, but I'm not sure you'd fit a boat on the River Wandle. It's not a question that you'd ask somebody in Tooting. But if you live on the Isle of Wight, and you live on a... I don't know how long it takes. Maybe you can drive to any place in the Isle of Wight within 30 or 40 minutes. It's not big. And it's obviously surrounded by water. Then boats are probably the way that you're going to get around. Boats are at least the way that you're going to get to the mainland. In some places, you might not be asked, who are you leading? But in shofar, you will be asked, who are you leading? Now, like I said earlier, don't switch off, because you might not be a small group leader now, or a zone coach now, or a shine leader now, but you will be being prepared for leadership. And even if you're not in shofar, by virtue of your education, you'll be leaders in the world. By virtue of being a parent, you're a leader. I have to kind of balance my time between some teaching that I do and then church work and family work. And one of the things that helps me is to think of all those things as integrated. So it's not this is one piece of the pie that God's going to have for church, and this is one piece of the pie that God's going to have through family. This is one piece of the pie that God's going to have through the way I might earn some money. It's to think of them all as the same. And we've got 5 children. Even if you're not a parent now, even if you're not close to being a parent now, think of your children or your future children as leaders to be developed. People to be discipled and leaders to be developed. So... have a story that's been going for, I'd forget how long, maybe a year or two or more, that I tell the children at night time. And if you can tell a story, whether it's to children or to adults, and through that story work in the principles that you want to teach, then it will help in that teaching. So when I'm telling them this story, I'm thinking, what can I teach them about discipleship? What can I teach them about leadership and what it means to be a leader? It's never too young to be a leader. I call the sermon, Follow My Leader. And Paul says later on in 1 Corinthians, he says, follow me as I follow Christ. Every leader is also a follower. Every leader is also a follower, because they've not got it from nowhere. They're either consciously or subconsciously following somebody else. If you're born into the Nehru Gandhi family, or if you're born into the Kennedy family, or the Bush family, or the Bhutto Zardari family, if you're born into those families, you'll be groomed for leadership. And if you've chosen to be part of Shofar, you will be developed as a leader. Before that, you'll be discipled. Ahead of that, you'll be discipled. Because discipleship reminds us that we're all following Jesus. So whether we're leading one person, or 100 people, or 100 congregations, we're all following Christ. We're all disciples. But as we are discipled, and as we disciple others, if you're in this church, whichever congregation it will be, you'll be developed as a leader. And it's hard. So if you think being in Shofar is hard, then it is. So that it is. Now, leaders need a break. Everyone needs a sabbatical. Everyone needs a rest. Leaders need preparation. But I'm not going to dress up the fact that it will be hard. If you want to fulfill the vision of this church, then it will be hard. Ask Fred and Lucille, who've served this vision for many years. And I've used him as an example before. He's about to retire from his playing career, but there's a rugby league player called James Peacock, who used to captain England and Great Britain. And one thing that he has said, is if there's no one in his life who's unhappy with him, then he's not committed enough to rugby league. If there's no one in his life who's unhappy with him for turning down an invitation, or for whatever it may be, then he's not committed enough to rugby league. So there will be tough choices to make. You can't be a leader without making choices. We could have looked at Jesus, and we no doubt will. And Paul takes his teaching from the teaching of Jesus. Paul took his model from the model of Jesus. We could have looked at Old Testament characters as well, and maybe we will over the next few weeks. But just let's take some principles from this chapter, and then we're going to have communion together, because communion is a good way of just bringing us all to the same level. If you're saved, if you follow Jesus, then you're invited to that meal. If you're not, then just politely decline, or even better than politely declining is to be saved and then have the meal. But don't take that decision lightly, because if you take that decision, it's not I'll have a meal today, I'll have communion today. It's something that will determine the rest of your life. You're setting yourself on a path that says, I'm going to follow Jesus. I'm no longer going to follow myself. I'm no longer going to follow somebody else's plan for my life. I'm going to follow Jesus' plan for my life. So we're going to have communion together shortly. If you're not saved, then politely decline, or speak with someone, speak with me, let's say that, and accept Jesus' invitation to follow him. Some of us don't like being told what to do? Who likes being told what to do? Okay, a few. That's good. So there's different styles of leadership, and there's different styles of... There's different ways in which people respond to leaders. There's styles of leadership. There's ways in which people respond to leadership. Some of us don't like being told what to do, but even those of us that don't like being told what to do would acknowledge that we need a guide. And it's the same thing, a guide, somehow we think, okay, yeah, I need a guide if I'm going to go through the Himalayas, or I'm going to go need a sat-nav if I'm going to travel somewhere where I've not been before. Yes, I'll have a guide. We understand the need for that. But on the other hand, when somebody tells us what to do, it's two sides of the same coin, but it's harder to look at that face of the coin for some of us. But leadership is sometimes about telling people what to do. Now, you won't be forced into shofar, you won't be forced into a leadership position, so don't think I've got a list of jobs that need filling and that's why I'm preaching this sermon. It's an ongoing development for all of us. We're being developed as leaders so that God's purpose can be fulfilled through us. And on that theme of development, the first thing to say about leadership is that it is development. Paul says in verse 2, I gave you milk, not solid food, for you were not yet ready for it. Indeed, you're still not ready. Leadership is development. I once took a group of teenagers on a leadership development week. It felt a lot more like personal development, for me at least, than it did leadership development. But even a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old, you'll be able to tell the difference. So I spent some time a few months back, just about a month, teaching in Little Gates, our school, and I learned what's expected of children at 2 and 2.5, and then what's expected of them of 3 at 3, and then 3.5 and 4. And obviously there's overlap. People develop at different stages, but all of us develop. All of us develop, otherwise we'd be sitting here in huge nappies. Some of us don't like change, but we need to develop. We need to accept change, otherwise we'll stay as infants. And Paul says to this church in Corinth that they're not yet ready. He says, I gave you milk, not solid food, for you were not yet ready for it. And after milk comes what? Milky food, milky meals, sloppy, soggy. Some of us, I do that now even with a cake. I pour milk on it and make it soggy. But we develop. I think third tooth came through this last week. So she's able more and more to have solid food. She's not yet eating steaks, but she will. No longer is she satisfied with just milk. And if I think about a child, I thought, you know, how long until we start weaning her? Once you've started that process, you can't go back. Once you've given someone a taste of food, they're going to want some more. So, and you'll notice if you have more than one child how kind of standards change, but your first child, you might be able to keep them off sweets for maybe a year and a half and two, but after that, then it goes down because the younger ones see the older ones and they'll copy. And if the older one has it, they'll get it as they can get their hands on it. But leadership is development. And you won't be developed beyond your capacity or your capability. So we'll be at different levels of leadership, different stages of our development as leaders. But we all will be somewhere on that process, somewhere on this process of leadership development. And the second thing that Paul highlights here, he says in verse 5, what is Apollos, what is Paul? Only servants through whom you came to believe as the Lord has assigned to each his task. Leadership is service. Many people want to lead, not many people want to serve. Leadership is service. The model of leadership that Jesus gives, that Paul followed, that anybody who adheres to the teaching of the Bible will follow or teach, is servant leadership. So don't think that this tough leadership that's being offered is something for your CV primarily, or something for your self-development. It's about other people. Leadership is about service. If there's no one to serve, if we're not serving people, then we're not being developed as leaders. I could spend hours and hours with a tennis racket or a cricket ball or a guitar or whatever it may be, but if all I do is keep that tennis ball, tennis racket, cricket ball, cricket bat, guitar, plectrum, capo, if I just keep them in a room with me, I'm not leading anyone. I'm developing myself. I am doing personal development. But if I choose to use my skills to lead other people in worship, or to lead other people on a sports field, or to lead other people in a business room, or to teach other children in a classroom, or to train other children at home, then I'm being developed as a leader. It's not individual. Leadership is service, and to serve, you need people. The following verse, Paul says, I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God made it grow. Leadership is of God. Even if your leader is not good, even if your leader is not godly, leadership is of God. Now that's hard. That is very hard. Can a Christian be involved in a revolution if leadership is from God? We can talk about it later. We discuss it in Bible school. Leadership is of God. Paul and Peter both confirm this. Paul says, just a few pages before, Romans chapter 13, verse 1, everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Leadership is authorized by God, even when the leader is not godly and the leader is not good. Leadership is authorized by God. That puts us in difficult positions. That isn't easy. But whether the leader is good or godly is irrelevant to the fact that that leadership has been established by God. Peter confirms this. 1 Peter and chapter 2. I've not got it on the screen, but you can write the reference if you wish. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 13 to 15. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority instituted among men, whether to the king as a supreme authority or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish men. Leadership is authorized by God. If you have a tough boss, remember that God has given you that boss. Does God approve of abuse? No, never. But does God put leaders in positions where they can abuse? Yes, he does. Now that puts us in tough places as well. God never wants us to be abused. Now, abuse is an emotive word. But the fact is that leadership can be used and it can be abused. It can be misused, but abuse means it's misused in such a way that it is to the detriment of people. God has a way of not only placing leaders in authority, but taking leaders from authority. And we might not see it, or we might not appreciate God's timing. But God gives leadership, and he can take leadership away. Verse 9 of 1 Corinthians chapter 3. For we are God's fellow workers, you are God's field, God's building. Leadership is partnership with God and people, human and divine. Try and, as individuals, make yourself into a building. Go on. Not bad. That's good. But if you were to do it in pairs or threes, then I reckon it could work. Try and make yourself as an individual into a field. That's what Paul says. We're God's field. It's a bit hard. But if we do it together, we could do it. If we had more time, we could do it. Leadership is partnership. God invites us to partner with him. Partner with him. We have to accept his authority. Otherwise, we don't make that first step of discipleship. Let alone all the further steps. But having accepted God's authority, he then says, partner with me. Partner with me on this. But he'll also say, he'll always say, partner with other people, because God doesn't work with individuals. God works with families. God works with communities. God works with nations. And if you're the only one who's saved in your family, or you're about to be saved and you're the first in your family to be saved, then the idea that God has is that you'll be a leader within that family. You may not have the position of head of the family, but spiritually you can take that position, and that's what our legacy course is about. If you've not done it, then please consider doing it. We'll probably run it again in the autumn. Even if you have done it, you can do it again. God purposes us and places us in families so that we can redeem others. He redeems us so that we can redeem others. He partners with us and invites us to, he rather invites us to partner with him so that we can involve others and invite others to that partnership. When we do the legacy course, it's quite interesting because we introduce a concept of the strong one. And there's some people who want to be the strong one for a whole nation. And that's good to think big, but start with where you are. Lead yourself, your body, your soul, and your spirit. Lead your family, those around you. Lead any others that God has given you to lead. And as we develop as leaders, God will give us more to develop. When Shofar asked us, would we pastor the congregation that would be planted, we'd been leading a group of teenagers in our previous church. And God promises us that if we're faithful with a few, then he'll give more. So rather than thinking of leading down the line, think, who do I have now? Who is there in my life now who I can lead? And I said it's hard, and Paul confirms this. Verse 13. Work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light. It will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test the quality of each one's work. Testing can make or break. But if you're wanting to put your trust in somebody, you want that person to be tested. I don't want to put my trust in this chair unless it's been tested, unless it's been made well. And God tests us not to prove a point, not to make comment. He tests us so that he can know whether he can trust us with others. So if life is hard, if leading a small group is hard, then don't be surprised. Don't think it's personal. It is. It is. And God qualifies by testing. Is this person able to lead their family? Then I can give them other families also to lead. And we could say a lot about this next point, but Paul makes it quite clearly. Verse 18, don't deceive yourselves. If any one of you thinks he is wise by the standards of this age, he should become a fool so that he may become wise. Leadership is different in God's kingdom. It's not double standards, it's completely different standards. completely different standards. If you lead in God's kingdom, then you lead by a different law code. You lead by a different model to the model that the world has. One of the biggest changes I noticed coming kind of from the medical field to the ministry field, and they overlap. Any of the fields that we have overlap, whether we're in acting or in medicine, whether we're in education, whether we're in housework, whether we're in child caring, whatever it is that we're doing, whether we're in business or whether we're in administration, it is our ministry. But the biggest change I noticed from spending most of my time in higher education and the NHS to coming to most of my time working within God's kingdom, directly serving God's people so that they can then go and be ministers where they are, was that autonomy is the principle that the world has, the right to self-determine. And we do have autonomy. God gives us that autonomy. But he gives us that autonomy within the context of his authority. And if we have a problem with authority, we'll probably find it hard to lead. We can't be in authority unless we're under authority. We cannot exercise leadership unless we submit to leadership. So I don't pastor this congregation in a vacuum or on a pedestal which says I can do what I want. That's not the leadership model that we have. Every leader who is in leadership is under leadership. Every leader who exercises authority is under authority. And the world has a problem with authority. Jesus said that lawlessness will be the characteristic of the last days. And if you speak with friends who don't follow Christ, the right to self-determine is often paramount. I can choose how to live my life. I can choose what I do with what I have, with what I've been given. And biblical leadership is a completely different standard, because biblical leadership tells us that my life is not my own. My family is not my own. My children are not my own. My giftings are not my own. They belong to God. God gives us autonomy, and he doesn't coerce, he doesn't twist arms up backs and say, use your gifting this way. Paul also tells us God's giftings and his call are irrevocable. He won't take them back. When God gives a gift of a voice or a body that can act or play sport in a certain way, and that's used for his glory, he doesn't take the gift away when it's not. God gives us autonomy within the context of his authority. And he says, accept my authority and then choose life. He will guide us. That's what Holy Spirit does. He will tell us what to do. Two sides of the same coin. Choose whichever one you like. But sometimes we'll have to take the side of the coin that we don't like, to be told what we have to do. And the final point, verse 23, Paul says, you are of Christ, and Christ is of God. So he says, all are yours, and you are of Christ, and Christ is of God. Authority is of God. And the reason Jesus came to earth was so that he could delegate authority to us. We're in the season of harvest at this time, so you should know this verse quite well by now. But Psalm chapter 2 and verse 8. This is God the Father speaking to God the Son. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your inheritance, the ends of the earth your possession. God is the head. The head of Christ is God. Christ is the head of us. But then he wants to give his authority to us. He wants us, if he knows that he can trust us to use his authority according to his principles, then he will say, lead this family. He'll say, lead this company. He'll say, lead this nation? If he knows that he can trust us to use the giftings that he's given us according to his principles. We're going to have communion, and maybe there's not too much time to discuss this, but just to pray this in small groups. If you're here as a guest, then we'll make a group. But what do we do with our gifts? First of all, we examine them. What a gift do I have? And the benefit of a small group is because it's a place where giftings can come out. Someone can recognize in you, you have that gift of getting alongside people and bringing them in. Examine your gifts, explore your gifts, and then experience your gifts. If you think you have a gift of music, then speak with Meg and Meryl when she's not otherwise busy. I think God's given me this gift. How would I explore that? If you think you have a gift of working with children, then speak with Charlotte and say, could I shadow you? And don't restrict your giftings to those that are used in church. We don't yet have a shofar cricket team. So if your gifting is cricket, then you're going to exercise it outside. We don't yet have shofar businesses in the UK, we do in South Africa. But if your gifting is business, then you'll use it outside of shofar. But the whole earth is God's. It's not that part of it, I'll use my giftings in a sacred way and then I'll use my giftings in a secular way. Wherever you are, use your giftings. There won't be time for discussion, but maybe just pray for each other in small groups. And Mrs. Van Heerden, you can go wherever your daughter thinks is appropriate for you, but I'll meet with Lineker and Edward and Jennifer. Jennifer or Jen? Okay. And otherwise, go in your small groups. And there might be some people watching on the video as well, so you might need to shuffle between one room and the other. But yeah, if you could serve communion, and then keep your communion, and then just have it together within your small group. So it's Meryl and Charlotte, and me housed in the back, and Asanga's here. And Weybridge, have a Weybridge group. So Anine, Wade, and I think Trevor is also through there.